This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Kusu Chuang. And we have the top business stories for you this morning. But before that, a quick reminder that after the 8 o'clock bulletin, we're going to be having as our guest Troy Ruhanen. He is the president and CEO of TBWA Worldwide. It's a global advertising agency. And he's going to be going head-to-head with you, Chuang.
Yes, he's got lots of comments, I think, feedback in terms of where the global markets are. He, you know, the quick comments we had a discussion about were, in his own words, positive, I guess, which goes against the grain of where we think the ASEAN economies are and the challenges brought about by the Chinese, a slowdown and what have you.
Okay, so that's going to be an exciting discussion. Stay tuned for that, because you can always join in the conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or sending us a message on WhatsApp. Our new number is 018-789-8899. That's 018-789-8899. Lots of questions to be posed to what is a global advertising agency? How do you play the game in this really tight market, I guess, is the frame that you're going to be bringing to that conversation.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so the news. Let's begin. Yesterday, Bank Negara Malaysia issued a strongly worded statement on the introduction of ringgit futures on the Singapore Stock Exchange. It said that this goes against Malaysia's foreign exchange policy and rules. Now, because this this initiative by the Singapore Stock Exchange happened about a month ago, the statement only came out yesterday on Singapore's National Day. So I wonder about the timing.
Yeah, I don't know whether there's much more to it than meets the eye. But, essentially, what's been going on the last few years, I think the last two or three years, prior to 2017 at least, was the fact that the ringgit was the worst performing currency in Asia. By now, I think we lost something like 30-35% of our value to the dollar. I think 315, 310 was kind of like where we were for the longest time. And then we just went from 310 to as low as 450, 417, I think at one point in time intraday. So, you know, huge concerns on where the ringgit was going. Oil prices were being blamed. Malaysia's fiscal discipline was being blamed. I think then what eventuated was Bank Negara stepping in with various measures to control speculation in the ringgit. And of course, as we know, the ringgit is not an internationalized currency, not in the way that the pound sterling or US dollar is internationalized.
Now, does that come out of
the 1998 Asian financial crisis?
Yeah. And, you know, is that time? I mean, is this time now to kind of think anew, put that up for debate about whether we need to just embrace the fact that, you know, global currency markets are what they are and play with that?
Well, you know, that's a decision for Bank Negara to make, and you know, for people like us, we really have no, we don't have a comprehensive view on the absolute permutations of an internationalized currency.
Yeah.
It does serve, I think it did serve our purposes to be at one time pegged to the US dollar, and it did serve us to a certain extent about being on a managed float as we are now. But the decline in the ringgit, even with those managed flows to 450 levels, was very disconcerting for the country.
I mean, you know, we've had many enemies. And at one point, we had George Soros as an enemy. And more recently,
he was blamed for the drop in the ringgit.
Yeah, I mean, meaning he was framed in such a way. But, well, we had this three-word acronym, NDFs, non-deliverable forwards, also became a kind of like whipping boy for the problems of the currency, didn't it? And we had Bank Negara measures that included making banks sign up to a commitment to cease trading the ringgit on offshore NDF market, and also to introduce a requirement for exporters to convert at least 75% of their export revenues back into ringgit.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, there's essentially two markets for the ringgit. There's one is the onshore market, which is very highly regulated by the central bank, and then there's the offshore market, which has a high degree of speculation, but albeit a necessary degree of speculation, because it reflects where prices are, it reflects where sentiments are, the ringgit, and it is on those offshore markets, the non-deliverable forwards, that the ringgit was being beaten down by investors anywhere around the world, whether it's a big pension fund or big global funds, because of concerns about where the ringgit was heading. And it's all, of course, got to be tied in with Malaysia's fiscal discipline. It's the high debt levels, I guess, both on the on the debt to GDP ratio as well as on the contingent liabilities, and it was really a reflection of where the ringgit was.
Yeah, I mean, one of the conversations that we were having at that period of time when the NDFs became a big issue was whether this was going to hurt genuine exporters, businessmen who'd relied on keeping their money outside, offshore and such, and what was this going to do for business. But we also had a statement last month from Bank Negara Governor, that's Sri Mohammad Ibrahim, says that 80% of transactions of ringgit dollar trading in offshore markets were speculative transactions. So kind of really saying, characterizing this as something that, you know, that was bad for the ringgit, and that if we tackled it, wouldn't really hurt genuine businessmen.
Yeah, but you know, if the US dollar or the pound sterling or the Japanese yen, any of these other international currencies, there is speculation on these currencies. It is where the market thinks the currency is headed. If the world thinks that Donald Trump is bad for business and the economy in America is going south, then they will sell the dollar, as it has been for the last few months. We talked about the dollar index with Ben LeBron and at 92. There's a lot of pessimism on the US dollar at this point in time. There is no agenda. I think they don't think there's any malice of forethought when it comes to speculation. It's just where the market thinks a particular currency should be relative to its economic performance.
Yeah, so can we come back to the Singapore Stock Exchange and this particular thing? Could you give us some details about that?
Well, you know, all this is obviously, it's very complex. And the fact is, I think a month ago, the Singapore Exchange introduced a new product within its fold, which is a ringgit futures product, which allows, I guess, investors to bet against or to bet on the direction of the ringgit. Bank Negara doesn't like it because it can't regulate it, I guess, and hence the strongly worded statement. I guess the question really is, can Malaysia dictate terms to other countries about its own currency? I'm not sure whether we have a leg to stand on or not.
Okay, fascinating discussion. We'll come back to that, I think, in days to come. Let's look at the East Coast Rail Link. It's also in the news because of the groundbreaking ceremony yesterday, which was attended by the Prime Minister Najib Razak, as well as Chinese State Councillor Wang Yong, who was here as special representative of President Xi Jinping. Now, we've had a lot of discussion about this, and there's talk about China and Chinese investments here. Where are we in terms of this conversation? The government of the day is confident that our negotiations with the Chinese are benefiting the country, not just in the short term, but in the long term, and that there's no cause for concern, and that, in fact, much of the concern comes out of the politicized discourse around Chinese investments.
Well, you know, let's just go on record as saying that these infrastructure projects are very good for business, they're very good for the country, and they're very good for the economy as a whole. I guess the concern really centers on how much we're paying for these infrastructure projects and what kind of obligations the country will be put under as a result of these obligations. When we look at the East Coast Rail Line, for example, the Prime Minister is going on record saying yesterday that the terms of financing are actually quite lenient. 85% of the project financing, including a soft loan at 3.25%, from China Exim Bank. So how much of the 85% is on those terms and how much of the rest is on other possibly impecunious terms?
Yeah, also, then the question is, you're saying that we don't have complete transparency
terms. Not on the basis of this story from The Edge, because it says including a soft loan at 3.25. 3.25% is a fantastic rate to be paying. That's a great cost of funds. But how much of the 85%? 85% of 55 billion is a lot.
Okay. Also, there was a statement made by the Prime Minister that this $1 billion or $55 billion ECRL project is a game changer. The question of economic impact, social impact and such, spin-offs, ecosystems, all these kind of terms and expressions swirl around the discussion of the ECRL. What do we understand is really going to happen? I mean, have we understood the impact well enough?
Well, no, obviously there's going to be huge multiplier effects, right, from this from these linkages, because it can carry people, goods and services, product to and from areas of manufacturing to places of export and of carriage to the rest of the world.
Except it's that, you know, fantastic. There's been a lot of criticism about how China does business in other places where they have had big infrastructure projects. They've imported workers, they imported technical staff, so that there isn't so much of a technology transfer. They're basically basically using other countries as a way of offloading oversupply of, you know, of their skills and such back home, right? They don't have enough projects back home. They're coming out to do so. I mean, do you think there's a way of making sure that we benefit the most as much as possible from these projects?
I love the fact that you're interviewing me now, Sharad. As if I'm an expert on the topic. But let me just say in anecdotal terms about, you know, these infrastructure projects. Let's take the MRT, for example, right? I've sat in it a few times now. I think it's a really fantastic product. One of the best in the world, I agree, but it's the terms on which we paid for it. How much money went into the MRT and how much of that was real dollar cost and how much of it was inflated and lost to, you know, interested parties?
Also, very quickly, we have Netflix in the mix this morning with news that Disney will be parting ways with Netflix. We've had a Netflix side of the story as well, haven't we, with Media Prima selling product to Netflix.
Yeah, and of course, Telekom Malaysia adding Netflix content to the fold. It's about the war for eyeballs, isn't it? It's the war for eardrums as people cut the cord for pay TV operators.
Well, the Klang Valley is going to have their going to devote their eardrums to you, Chuang, after the 8 o'clock news when we have our guest Troy Runahan, who's president and CEO of TBWA Worldwide, a global advertising agency. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.